Good morning. For a missions conference, usually you invite missionaries to come and share with you what they've been doing, what they're doing. We're retired missionaries. We're going to share with you what we're not doing. Actually, this is our opportunity to, for the first time in 10 years, because it was 10 years ago that we stood at this platform and shared with you. Back in 2010, and this is our first opportunity in 10 years then to look you the eyes in the eye, les yeux dans les yeux, eye to eye, I think that's how Americans say it, eye to eye, and to say thank you for your faithfulness in praying for us, in supporting us, and you need to know that our ministry in France depended in large part on what you were doing here at Robinson Baptist Church. Look how beautiful you are. Have you noticed? You're beautiful. Look around. You're beautiful. Do you realize that when missionaries, at least this missionary, when we would visit a church, when we visited your church, we would just notice things. I didn't mean to be staring. If I made you uncomfortable because I was staring, I was just thinking, I'm going to go back to France and I'm going to ask the Lord to bring that kind of a person into our church. Lord, give us a church that looks a lot like Robinson Baptist Church. Lord, raise up people who are willing to sing, bring special music that you've gifted, and who praise your name in song, and who are willing to share with the rest of us. And Lord, bring us somebody like Mr. Wiersma. Don't bring us a lot of them, just one, but at least one. Amen. That we can, who has a heart for the burden that he carries and wants to share. And the Nortons, and I'm not going to go through the whole list. I don't know the directory. But you wonder, what are missionaries thinking about when we're sitting on the front row waiting for our turn to speak? We're asking the Lord, Lord, raise up people. We started the church in our living room, apartment living room on the ground floor of a four-story apartment building. And we prayed, Lord, give us a building, kind of like Robinson Baptist Church. And we started the church with students. And I love students. Our town was a university town. And students bring, if you're a student, I love you. You bring a lot of excitement, a lot of activity, a lot of, I was going to say agitation, but that's not the right word. But you bring a lot of life into a church. The only problem with students is that they don't stay. They come to the university, they learn what they need to learn, and then they move on. And so I look at the settled families, the couples, the groups, family groups. Lord, this is what we need to have a church in France that endures. And I can go on and on. I remember thinking, Lord, finally, there was a building. And there were so few of us that it echoed. Can you imagine? And we had room to grow. And I remember looking out over those 120 chairs and thinking, I'm going to put away some of those chairs so that people don't sit way at the back. That's not the only thing I thought. But I thought, Lord, fill up the chairs. Fill up the chairs with men and women and children who love you, who will come to know you, who will do what you want them to do. And he did. And it's because you were praying. You were the example for us. Now, I don't know you personally, but isn't it something that you can be a testimony sitting in your place, singing, oh, your songs. If only the French could really sing. I love the French people. They have other talents, but some can sing. Who am I to talk about singing? But the Lord uses you sitting where you are, participating in the community, in the church community, by your presence, by your giving. We couldn't have done it on our own. For one thing, it was against French law. Back in the 1980s, we arrived in France in 1982, we didn't have the right to work. We had to be fully supported. We had to have proof of support. It was thanks to you and other churches like yourselves that the government allowed us in. They love Americans. Americans bring money into the French economy. This is our chance. This is our opportunity for my wife and I to say thank you, to look you in the eyes and to say thank you for everything you've been, the model, the example, the prayers, the giving, every missionary dollar that you put in that offering plate. And we have benefited our whole lives. Well, almost our whole lives, 40 years. And it's just marvelous. It leaves me speechless to talk about it that way. The 40 years have gone by so fast, I haven't had a chance to really accept the fact that we have transitioned into retirement. Now, somebody told me at the beginning, this was in 2019, just about the same time, I'll never forget when it was we decided to retire. It was when they announced the worldwide plague. Not a plague, but you know what I'm talking about. COVID-19 came in. We retired officially from Baptist Mid-Missions in 2019. And at the same time, France in March then of 2020 went into lockdown for 6 weeks. I spent the first 6 weeks of my retirement in lockdown. Now, isn't that exciting? No, I need to quit talking about myself, but this is our chance to say thank you. You prayed. I mentioned in the Sunday school hour that you began supporting us in 1981. That's before we arrived on the field. And I'm sure that you prayed that the Lord would get the Faroes to France as soon as possible. So you prayed as we continued our seeking support and visiting churches, keeping us safe on the road, giving us a fruitful ministry in the churches, what we call a pre-field ministry. And you prayed, and for the ones who, for example, who came forward during missionary conferences to surrender their lives to the Lord, it's because you prayed. And other churches that took us on for support after Robinson Baptist, it's because you prayed. We are not going to minimize how the Lord uses prayer to accomplish His will. And then finally the day came when we had enough money. Have you ever heard a missionary say that? But the day came and we had enough money. And around 30 churches supporting us. And so we were able to get on that plane with a one-year-old, a two-year-old. Now, don't tell me about having children back-to-back. I know all about it. But we had a one-year-old, a two-year-old, and somebody who was going to turn four once we arrived in France. And said goodbye to our family in Mount Pleasant and landed in France. Actually, we didn't land in France. We took a hovercraft. You don't know what those are, but they're little boats with inner tubes around them. It looks like a huge inner tube that they blow up so it will float across the English Channel, because we were coming from Scotland, where Elva's sister was a missionary in Scotland. When we tried to go to France, the French missionary said, don't come right now. Can you imagine? For 2.5 years, we've been trying to get to France. And when we were finally ready, we told the missionaries on the field we would be arriving, we could arrive. And they said, not right now. And we found out it was because once a year, the missionaries in France would all congregate at the same time in the Paris area for a yearly conference. And everybody's bed and bathroom were being used during that conference, as all of the missionaries came from around France. And they didn't have room for another family of five. And so we took advantage of the delay and went to Scotland and spent 2 weeks with my sister-in-law, who was a single missionary at that time, and working with the Carmichael. So I don't know if you know the Carmichaels in Scotland. But I was able to preach in English, if you can call Scottish English, if you can call my preaching at that time. But I was there on Easter Sunday, 1982. And then afterwards, after the conference was over in France, we arrived April 16th, 1982. And you prayed as we adjusted to a new culture and as we went to language school in Paris at the Alliance Française. And my French is not a reflection of their hard efforts to teach this American French. But one thing I did want to say, though, before I get too far, Monsieur le Pasteur, je tenais à vous remercier, à te remercier, frère, de m'avoir prêté ta place, d'avoir cédé ta place ici. He's going to explain to you afterwards what I said. But you see how important your prayers were, and maybe you have some missionaries that, Lord, bless the missionaries. Let's be a little bit more specific. Let's be a little bit more involved in their everyday lives, their needs, the complications that exist, but also the opportunities. And you prayed as we went to language school and learned the language. And we're still learning it. And still so many things I want to know about France. But anyway, life has a way of leaving you behind, doesn't it? Or moving you forward. I'm not sure how it goes, but you prayed as we considered our place in France, because at the time it was an open door. We could have settled anywhere and worked with anyone, but as you prayed, the Lord put it on the hearts of co-workers Rich and Karen Visser to invite us after 2 years of language school in the Paris area. You prayed as we moved to La Rochelle and on the west coast of France and helped them in their new work. And we were there for 2 years and had the first opportunities to lead French people to the Lord. And what a blessing that was. And to be right there at the birth of a New Testament church, it was wonderful. And Rich isn't here, but I say everywhere I go that everything I learned about being a missionary in France, I learned from him during those first 2 years, second 2 years in La Rochelle. And then you prayed as we said our goodbyes to people who become as dear as family in that church. And the Lord moved us across the country, almost 7 hours, to the city of Reims. We say Reims. That bothers French American people, so we say Reims. But the city of Reims, and started a brand new work. There wasn't any Baptist church before we arrived. And now, by the grace of God, there is one. And you prayed as we struggled with opposition. We had religious leaders calling us, telling us that there were enough churches in the city, they didn't need another one. And I said, well, how many people are in your church? And they would say a couple hundred, 200, 300. The largest had about 600 people. When we counted all of the people in these evangelical churches, no Baptist churches, but evangelical, where maybe you could hear the gospel, we counted just about 1,000 people, all told. And not everybody attended every Sunday, but about 1,000 people. But we were in a city of almost 200,000 people. And pastors were calling us, telling us that the city was saturated already. Can you imagine the mentality? And so we just didn't pay attention to them. But we became known as isolationists because we didn't leave and we stayed. And praise the Lord, we did not take people out of their churches. I don't know if that's good or bad, but we cannot be accused of sheep stealing. Most of the people that we came, that we led to the Lord, were people from outside of church and had to be taught everything. And you were praying for us. And adding living stone upon living stone to build a church that's modeled on the biblical pattern. And if you didn't have opportunity 40 years ago because you're too young to have prayed for the ferals, you can choose a missionary, adopt a missionary, and pray for them, and write to them, and find out personally, what should I pray about? What's happening in your lives? How can I help? And pray, get involved with your missionary, your missionaries, yes, that you support. Now, a lot of people, when they heard about the Baptist Church, because we were putting invitations in mailboxes, we had the right to do that, they would call. There was no internet in those days. Can you remember a world without internet? But there was none. And we did everything by hand and by footwork and left invitations in mailboxes with our phone number. Some people would even call at 3 o'clock in the morning. But I can't repeat what they said. Obscene remarks. There was that kind of opposition from religious leaders and opposition from Livoriens, les gens, the people that couldn't see the benefit of what we were doing in their town by leaving a piece of paper in their mailbox. They just had to call us at 3 o'clock in the morning to tell us what they thought of us. It didn't matter because I still hadn't learned all of the French swear words. So they could say anything they wanted over the phone. It just left me indifferent. It didn't matter. And I could still say thank you, but it would be better to call before 3 or after 3, but not at 3 o'clock in the morning. No, you prayed for us for our safety. You prayed for us as the Lord started to touch people's hearts and different ones would come. Students, lots of students, and then the first, I almost said real person, but they were all real, but the person who was a family person who brought his family with them, and then it mushroomed, and you prayed as we went from our living room, maxed it out, we had more than 14, but you can imagine a small living room, apartment-sized living room, and we moved, after 4 years, we moved across town and into a house, a real house, with a garage that we renovated. And it was still a garage. It was the most beautiful garage in the neighborhood. It was still a garage. Would you worship God in a garage? It had an opening onto the main road so people could come into the garage without going through our house. And they would come. We had weddings, we had baptisms. We didn't have any water in the garage, but we would walk half a block down the sidewalk to the municipal swimming pool. And at 12 o'clock, they closed to the public, and they would rent it to us. And that's where we would have our baptisms. We would take the hymn books and a portable organ and have a service with the candidates who would be baptized. And if we had pictures, I'm sorry I didn't bring a presentation today. We came to talk about what we're not doing instead of what we... But we had... the law said that there had to be a lifeguard. And so you can see pictures, unfortunately, of the lifeguard in our baptismal service. You don't want to see that picture. That's okay. In a swimsuit. Memories of seeing French men and women publicly confess their faith in Jesus Christ and their desire to be identified with him and to be founding members of the Baptist Church of France. It's just thrilling, and your prayers were a part of it. Then you prayed that we'd get a public building, because there is something psychological about having church services in a private setting. French people, and I think a lot of Americans, thought it kind of felt like a cult because it was at the pastor's house. You see what I'm saying? It wasn't public. And we found the Lord led us to a warehouse, and with time and money, lots of effort on the part of meeting with the city officials who would grant us the ability to transfer. Let's see, how do you say this in English? It's impossible. But to change the destination of a building. See, a building is destined to be a warehouse, or it's destined to be a public meeting place. And ours was a warehouse, and we needed to change it into a public meeting place. But we had to convince public officials to do that. Arm wrestling. And to explain that Baptists were not a cult. We were not manipulating people. We were not after their money. Most Baptists don't have any money anyway, so it didn't matter. But in the long run, the Lord convinced people little by little. If we could tell you, if we had the time to tell you all of the little things, we didn't have time. It was happening so fast. We needed so much public parking in order to have a public meeting place. Our parking spots were about 30 centimeters too short. And the inspectors that came out, there were two of them, had an argument over us. And one of them took his tape measure and measured the spot. And he turned to the other one and he said, they're 30 centimeters too short. In other words, we can't okay this project. Well, the other one said, You're not going to cut a project, stop a project for 30 centimeters. And the other man, who was just doing his job, hesitated. And the other one said, you are not going to stop a project for 30 centimeters. He broke the law so that the Baptist church could take its place on the site of that warehouse. So many, you didn't even know about it, but you were praying for us that the Lord would grant us a public building so that people would not be self-conscious or embarrassed about worshiping the Lord and trying to explain to their family members and neighbors. Because le quand dira-t-on means a lot. Le quand dira-t-on, that means what would people say? What would people say if they saw me coming out of your garage? If they saw me talking with the American pastor? What would people say? It means something in France. And so you were praying that people would get over their inhibitions and overcome their hesitancies. And you prayed that the Lord would fill up those 120 chairs, and he did. And you prayed that finally that the Pharaohs would work their way out of a job in that city of France. And the time came when a graduate of the French Baptist Bible College, where Elva and I both taught for about 14 years, one of those graduates was a candidate to replace me as the first French pastor of the church. Now, he came to our place, he came to the church as a as an apprentice in 2008, and after about a year and a half, the church was ready to let us go. It took that long. And then they invited him to step to the pulpit. And so I just wanted to remind you that you do have a daughter church in the heart of France, 90 miles northeast of Paris. You can't miss it. It's still the only Baptist church in that city of about 200,000 people. But if you're ever there on vacation, you have a home already. I should have had a key for pastor, but your place is there. I can go on and on and on. I just want to encourage you, if you're wringing your hands, if you're feeling guilty, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to help, I don't. Keep praying. Keep praying. Keep praying and keep praying. Now, I just want to say how beautiful you are. But what I really want to know is how much you're worth. And that's the message today, Pastor. How much are you worth? Look at Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. You probably in America, we don't go around saying, hello, how are you, and how much are you worth, in the same breath. Matthew chapter 6. We don't do that in France either. But the Lord is going to remind us how much we are worth. And that's important to me because so much in life and so much in ministry reminds us how much we're not worth, how much we are unworthy. But the Lord is going to put his accent on how much we are worth in Matthew chapter 6, verse 25. And this is a good balance because we know as sinners that we are unworthy of the least of his favors. I think it's a song. And no merit of my own. That's another song. And it's all true. But there's a compensating truth to our unworthiness. And that is the worth that the Lord ascribes to us. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 25. Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat, what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body than raiment? Behold the fowls of the air, for they sow not, neither do they reap, nor gather into barns. Yet your heavenly Father feedeth them. Are ye not much better than they? Which of you, by taking thought, can add one cubit unto his stature? And why take ye thought for raiment? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. I'm going to stop there. The question that Jesus asks at the end of verse 26, are ye not much better than they? It's a question of worth, of value. The much better. Are you worth more than the fowls of the air, the wild birds? The Lord's oversight extends to them. The Lord's provision extends to them. And the argument is an argument from the lesser to the greater. If God takes the time, the trouble, the effort, the interest in the fowls of the air, isn't he going to give that much more value, interest, time, trouble, watch, care to you? Are you not much better than they? I can go home today thinking I'm worth more than a wild bird. At least that. But the Lord goes on in Matthew chapter 10. We're going to stay in Matthew even though there are parallel passages. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 28. Fear not them which kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a farthing? And one of them shall not fall on the ground without your Father. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear ye not therefore, ye are of more value than many sparrows. Oh, am I moving up in the world? I'm worth more than the fowl of the air. The wild birds, here are birds that were grown or raised for food, raised for food, and you could buy them in the marketplace. They didn't cost all that much. Huh? Two sparrows sold for a farthing. And then I think in Luke, in the parallel passage, every once in a while there was a deal where you could get five for two farthings. But anyway, Jesus is saying the Lord's oversight, the Lord's watch care extends even to the sparrow, the tiniest of birds, the most insignificant of birds. Again, a lesson from the lesser to the greater. And so you are of more value than many sparrows. He counts the numbers, the hairs of our head. God is interested in details. The hairs of our head. Well, some of us have more than others. Some of us take more of God's interest than others. No, it's not that at all. It's that to the smallest of details, we have value in God's eyes, just as the sparrows do. Matthew chapter 12, verse 9. Matthew 12, verse 9. We're moving up in the world a little bit. When he was departed thence, he went into their synagogue. And behold, there was a man which had his hand withered. And they asked him, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days, that they might accuse him? And he said unto them, What man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep, and if it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day, will he not lay hold on it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. I'm not going to talk about the controversy, what you could do and not do on the Sabbath day. But even the scribes and the Pharisees and the legalists would bend the law if they had a sheep. Now in parallel passage it talks about a donkey. And even a son, if you had something of value that cost as much as a sheep or a donkey, if it fell into a dry well, that's what the pit is, a dry well, and would you just stay, let it sit there, let it lay there until the Sabbath was over? Nobody would do that. Every one of those accusers would bend the law to rescue that animal. And so how much better then is a man? How much then is a man better than a sheep? How much does a sheep cost? I tried to Google it. First I noticed that I couldn't find the aisle at Meijer for sheep. But when you try to Google it, you get so much information that it depends on the sheep. It depends on how old it is. It depends on what kind of race it is, what kind of species. Do you say race? What kind of sheep it is? If it's anyway, I'm not going to tell you all that. And so what I found was a sheep you'd probably get a sheep for around $600. Does that sound right? How much did your sheep cost? Anyhow, the sheep deserves to be rescued from a pit. And how much are we better than a sheep? And so forth and so on. It's this argument. We have a saying. I don't want to embarrass Pastor. But Pastor, you ought to know that your people love you. They told me so. And they say how much they say to me. Now I hope you will say it to him too. Okay? Say to him how much you appreciate him, you who told me this morning. But when we appreciate somebody, when we recognize everything that they do, we say, vous valez votre pesant d'or. Huh? That's what we say. Vous valez votre pesant d'or. You are worth your weight in gold. Why not silver? Why not precious stones? No, you are worth your weight in gold. You're worth your weight in gold. And that's when we appreciate. Now, I don't know if you realize that missionaries are very interested in gold. And so I looked this up. How much is gold worth? Gold, the last time I checked, because it changes, it fluctuates, doesn't it? It changes every day. In fact, it changes several times a day. But the last time I checked, gold was worth $1,798.40 an ounce. Now, if you are worth your weight in gold, how much are you worth? How much are you worth? You have to realize, before you say something, is that our ounces are not gold's ounces. Gold is measured in troy ounces. That's to complicate things. One troy ounce equals 1.097 ounces. So a troy ounce is heavier. One troy ounce equals 1.097. So if you weigh 100 pounds, don't raise your hand, but if you weigh 100 pounds, then you weigh 1,600 of our ounces. Huh? Because it's 16 times 100. But if you want to know how much you are worth of, in gold, you have to divide those 1,600 ounces by 1.097. I don't see any calculators out. You can do all that in your head. 1,600 ounces equals 1,458.52 troy ounces. Oh, now you know how much you weigh in troy ounces. You can multiply by the price of gold. So 1,458.52 troy ounces times $1,798.40 equals, are you ready for this, you 100 pounders? You are worth $2,623,002.37. $2,623,000. So when pastor wants to know how much his church is worth, every pastor wants to know how much his church is worth. And so I brought something. Excuse me, turning my back on you. Do you see what it is? Pastor wants to know how much his church is worth. So I'm just going to put it here, and I think we'll start with the deacon's wives. And we'll do the calculation for you. All you have to do is come and stand on this. No? If you weigh 150 pounds, $3,934,503.35. If you weigh 180 pounds, $4,721,415.05. If you weigh 200 pounds, $5,246,016.41. I'm not going to go higher than that. But I'm beginning to see that if I am worth my weight in gold, I have a very keen interest in weighing a lot. No, that's not, it's not healthy. Do you want to know how much your pastor is worth? You can do it later. If we are worth our weight in gold, let's just even it out to between $4 and $5 million. Is that a lot? There's something better. Look at Matthew chapter 16. I'm sorry. Matthew 16, verse 26. Matthew 16, verse 26. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? What is your soul worth, according to this verse? $5 million? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? What shall it profit him if he gain the whole world? Do you realize that you are worth more than the whole world and everything in it? Your one soul. Look at the person next to you. Not your wife. Look at somebody else. That person is worth more than the whole world and everything in it. You see, we need to get a sense of worth. I know we're sinners. I know we fail. But we confess our sins, don't we? And God forgives us our sins. And He has ascribed a value to us. He says, your one soul, Mike, is worth more than the whole world and everything in it. Somebody said, you determine the value of something by what you are willing to pay for it. You determine the value of something by what you are willing to pay for it. What was God willing to pay to rescue us? The life's blood of His Son. For God so loved the world, He gave His only begotten Son. I'm not going to go around saying, I'm not worth it, I'm not worth it, I'm not worth it. God gives me that value. He sees, not that I can do anything for my salvation, I can't. I'm helpless that way. But God sent His Son to save me, to redeem me, to buy me back. You see, we belittle ourselves for no reason at all, and we forget that God ascribes an infinite value to our soul because He paid an infinite price to redeem us. Oh, I have so many things to say. I have the whole back page. Maybe you'll invite me back. We only live in Greenville. We're neighbors. Can I just leave four verses with you that you can think about during the week? Can I do that, Pastor? He said I can. Four verses. Ephesians 4, verse 1. Ephesians 4, verse 1. We may be tempted to think that they all say the same thing, parallel passages, but the nuance, the differences are important. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1. Therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, therefore the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that ye walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called. The idea of worthy of the vocation, it comes from the world of finances, this word. It's the weight. You know, in the days, things were valued by weight, the weight of something. It was also the nature of gold, as the nature of gold was more valuable than the nature of silver. But overall, it was how much weight something was that determined its value. And this is the same word. To walk worthy is to accord the same weight as what you're comparing it to. We have been called. The vocation, the word vocation is a calling. We have a calling. I think it means our salvation. We've been called to salvation. We've been called God's sons. We've been called heirs of Christ, joint heirs, heirs of God, joint heirs with Christ. We've been called children of light and children of the day. You see, what is our calling? What is our this is talking about our Christianity, our salvation. And Paul says, I want you to weigh that. Here is your salvation. Here is your Christianity. Here is everything that God has done to reconcile you with Himself. It's on one side of the scales. Now I want you to weigh that. I want you to value it. And on the other side of the scales, I want you to bring in your walk, your daily life. Now here's the weight, the value of our salvation, and here is our walk with God every day. Now consider how you're walking. Does it measure up? Does it bring in the same weight? Are you showing others around you how much you value your salvation? How much you value your relationship with God? How much you value the cross? You see what I'm saying? I don't know if it's very clear. But to walk worthy means that you should bring in, on your side, the same weight as what you consider your possessions to be. You have these things. They are acquired by faith in Jesus Christ. Now, what are you going to bring into that? And it should be the same weight. Now, how do we do that? Well, in verse 2, with all lowliness, meekness, long-suffering, forbearing one another in love, unity of the Spirit, bond of peace. Excuse me. These are the things that are going to bring in the proper weight. This is our meekness, our humility, our modesty, patience, love, unity, and peace. These are things that we bring into our Christian life that we seek to show others and ourselves and God Himself how we estimate what He has given to us. We're doing a lot of estimations these days. We need an estimate on our roof. We need an estimate on our basement. We need an estimate. This old house that we bought in Greenville, well, it's going to be a wonderful retirement house when it's all done. I just hope to live that long. Lots of estimates, and people have to say what it's worth to them to do the job. And what is it worth to us to be called God's son, to be able to be called a Christian? Anyway, that you get the idea. Time is getting away from me, and so we'll go to Philippians chapter 1, verse 27. But these are the things I want you to think about. What place do these things have in my heart, in my life that God has given me? And do I bring in the proper weight? Philippians chapter 1, verse 27. Only let your conversation be as it becometh the gospel of Christ. The word becometh is this exact same word. The worthy. Let it be worthy. Let it have the same weight of value. Let your conversation, let your manner of life, your walk. it's a parallel verse, so we don't have to guess what it means. Let your manner of life be as weighty, at the same level of value as the gospel of Christ. The gospel, the good news of Christ. Can people see that you value it? How can they see it? That's your devoir. That's your homework this week. How can I let other people know how much I appreciate the good news that Jesus Christ died on the cross for my sins, that he was buried and that he rose again, and that he gives eternal life to everyone who believes? How can I let people see that that means something to me, that is valuable to me? And that's what Paul is asking the Philippians to do. Colossians chapter 1, verse 10. Colossians chapter 1, verse 10. That ye might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing. Worthy of the Lord. Not just the gospel of Christ. Not just our calling. But that we might walk worthy of the Lord. That changes everything. Does it please the Lord? Does pleasing the Lord matter to us? Is it valuable to us that the Lord might be pleased? You see, that's what Paul is asking the Colossians. Colossians, I want everybody in your immediate circle and beyond to know that pleasing the Lord matters to you. Your life will change. And the last verse, 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 12. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 12. We've already seen this verse this morning in Sunday school. Paul exhorted the Thessalonians, as a father doth his children, in verse 12, that ye would walk worthy of God. Oh, that should... Ça coupe le souffle. That means that takes away our breath. God is on the scale, and on my side, I have to bring something in of the same weight as God. How much does God weigh? How much do I value God? That is what I need to show people. Walk worthy of God. Walk worthy of God, that other people should know how much value you put on God, who hath called you unto his kingdom and glory. The emphasis is on the future, I think. The kingdom, when God will reign, all enemies will be put under his footstool, that his glory will be manifest. Are these things important to you? We're going to spend a happy eternity with God. A happy eternity together. And we need to let people know that that matters to us. That all our happiness isn't bundled up in today or tomorrow. But that much of our happiness is looking forward to a happy eternity with God. These are lots of things that we could spend lots of time on. But it's the idea of weight, how much we're worth, and how much worth do we ascribe to what God has given us. And does that show in our everyday lives? And I'm not here to tell you what you have to do and what you shouldn't do. That's your job to sort it out. in your personal experience, in your personal situation, with the people that surround you, the Lord will help you show them how much it means to you to know God, to be a beneficiary of the gospel, and that you're walking as the Lord should be pleasing to Him. I think the best thing is to stop there. Oh, did I say thank you? Thank you. Thank you for all that you've done for us. 40 years. And may the Lord bless you.